Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Hit the music. It's Saturday, it's just after 11, and you know what that means? It's time for the Live Science Radio Show.
Wow, what a totally amazing, excellent discovery.
It will test your head, and your mind, and your brain, too.
Come on, let's go, space trucker!
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also pick up the podcast for the show, which generally pop up 30 minutes after each hour. You've got Julie and Paul here live, as usual. We'll be talking to RPG later in the show. He's going to be talking about eyesight. All interesting stuff. It was teeth last week. And this week, our guest speaker is Chris Dale. Hey. He's going to be talking about the rise in cancer rates. It's a very interesting subject linked to diets. So we'll be speaking to him later in the show. Next week, all being well, it's Phil Muffett from the Mexican Swinton Astronomical Society doing his Astro Clinic. What his topic will be, who knows? And on that note, Paul?
Yes. The MSAS, or the Mexborough and Swinton Astronomical Society, Solar Sunday at RSPB Old Moor. And that's next Sunday, 30th of June, and Sunday, the 11th of August, between 11 and 3. It's free, but reserves charges still apply. A great opportunity to view the sun safely and hear from the experts about how the sun not only warms our planet, but also supports all life on Earth. You may even see evidence of solar flares, which are huge magnetic bursts of energy shooting into space.
And on that note, Thursday this week, was the summer solstice. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to do something about this. I'm sure Phil would have done a better job, but here we go.
Yes.
So our Earth rotates on its axis once each day, producing the cycle of night and day. And at the same time, the Earth moves around the sun on its orbit over the course of a year. However, the axis of rotation of the Earth is not lined up with the axis of motion around the sun. Instead, it's tilted slightly at 23.44 degrees. Very specific number there. And that tilt means that during one half of the year, the north side of the Earth is tilted slightly towards the sun and the south is tilted away. For the other half of the year, the reverse is true. Now, the summer solstice occurs when one of the Earth's poles, that can be the North Pole or the South Pole, has its maximum tilt towards the sun. It happens twice yearly, once in each hemisphere, so that's the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere, during that hemisphere's summer. At the exact moment that the Northern Hemisphere, which is our hemisphere, is most tilted towards the sun, That our northern hemisphere experiences its summer solstice. And the southern hemisphere, by contrast, has its winter solstice at that time. So on the summer solstice, Earth's maximum axial tilt towards the sun is 23.44 degrees. And likewise, the sun's declination from the celestial equator is 23.44 degrees. So the summer solstice is therefore the day with the longest period of daylight and shortest night of the year, when the sun is at its highest point in the sky. At either pole, there is continuous daylight at the time of its summer solstice. The opposite occurs at the winter solstice, when there is continuous darkness at either pole. So in the northern hemisphere, which is our hemisphere, the summer solstice is the June solstice, and that happened on the 20th of June, which was Thursday. And the winter solstice is the December solstice, which will be 21st of December this year. In the southern hemisphere, the winter solstice is their June solstice, which is the 20th of June. And the summer solstice is the December solstice. Yeah, very interesting, eh? So since prehistory, the summer solstice has been a significant time of year in many cultures and has been marked by festivals and rituals. Traditionally, in areas such as Europe, the summer solstice is seen as the middle of summer and referred to as midsummer, although in today, in some countries and counties, it's seen as the beginning of summer. And with the weather we've had this year in the UK, I would say that the solstice on the Thursday was probably the mark of the beginning of the summer, when the weather actually got much warmer. And the interesting thing is, although the summer solstice is the longest day of the year for that hemisphere, the dates of earliest sunrise and latest sunset vary by a few days. And that's because the Earth orbits the sun in an ellipse, and its orbital speed varies slightly during the year. So these summer and winter solstices are key points in the year, along with the spring and autumnal equinoxes. And they all help to determine the seasons on Earth. And if you're wondering what equinoxes are, as I was, I just looked it up, and it said at two points in the year, the sun will illuminate the northern and southern hemispheres equally. These are known as the vernal equinox or spring equinox and the autumnal equinox. On these days, there are approximately equal hours of daylight and darkness. So in the northern hemisphere, the vernal or spring equinox occurs in March, and this year it's the 20th of March, and marks the beginning of spring. And the autumn equinox occurs in September, and this year it's going to be the 22nd of September, and it marks the beginning of autumn. All interesting stuff, she says.
Oh,
What a great track that is. Joe Satriani there with a track called Summer Song. I think we'll be playing that on Glory Days. It's that yes. good. You're, of course, listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or Sheffield Live.org, talking about science in all its different forms. We should have our PG on the line.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Good morning. Nice, sounding nice and clear. So, last week, you told us all about teeth. Oh, I'm getting worried now. What's next? But we were talking off air, Paul. Our friend Chris sent us an article about mouthwash. Certain mouthwash has been linked to cancer now.
Yeah.
It's interesting, well, isn't it?
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's quite often they'll look at the degree of something that's contained and how much you use. So some things are found to be carcinogenic eventually, but they start off doing trials on things like mice and with massive overdose to see just what kind of limits you cope with. there's lots of things. We can have too much fluoride, and yet, if we don't put fluoride in, we have teeth problems. So
you can't win. In fact, this morning, just by chance, I do sometimes look at what's in toothpaste, but it's enough to put you off brushing your teeth with it, because there's all sorts of chemicals and sugar and salt and various things in there.
Well, and there used to be microplastic modules in.
Yes, they did.
To help abrade your teeth. So, you know, they've been changing as people have realised or have found the science to work out what that's doing. So it's interesting, and things change over time as well, which is what kind of got me onto the topic for today. Because when I was young, I was short-sighted, so I had to wear my glasses to drive, ride a bicycle or roller skate, it used to say, on my prescription.
Oh, what's that?
not something that I actually did, so I don't know why. But you sort of start out, and I used to have a problem, normal distances in the numbers on buses or destinations on buses. So that was kind of the problem with my eyesight. And then towards lockdown, I started to get what they call floaters, little sort of black specks floating around in my vision. And it was something I hadn't really sort of thought about. Or talk to people about much. So I know we discussed it sort of in sort of shows quite a while ago. But as you get older, there's changes in the sort of makeup of your eyes. So I started to think, well, you know, what do we actually know? Well, one of the bylines for everybody is, have you got 20/20 vision? So, do you know what 20/20 vision is?
Well, apparently I used to have it before I got to a certain age, and then it went downhill rapidly.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those. Everybody knows the byline, 20/20 vision, but what does that actually mean? So, we go to the opticians, and we see that wonderful chart on the wall, and we're supposed to read from it. Well, it's called a Snellen chart from the person who developed it, and it's got lines of different height lettering. So what they say is normal vision is that a person with normal vision can read up to line 8 from 20 feet. And these days you can get confused because they tend to use an optical trick. You sit in the chair and they actually shorten the actual distance but project into your eye something that is the 20-foot distance.
Oh.
So it's that sort of thing. But if you've got 20/20 vision, you can see that those first 8 lines on the chart from 20 feet, the equivalent of 20 feet away, and 20/20 in both eyes. So you can then sort of have a look, and for instance, if you found somebody who got 20/50 vision, what they can see is they can see the eighth line that a person sees at 50 feet because they've got long sight.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you get your prescription, if you've got an A plus sign on it, it means you're far-sighted. And if there's a minus, it means you're short-sighted. So kind of that's the norm. So we're looking at something over that sort of thing. And those charts do change in different countries because of things on the letters. You can see in some countries things like umlauts or accents on letters. So they do change for that. But what I found eventually after I got the problem, I went to see my optician and said, guys, it's kind of weird, but as I've got older, I've stopped wearing my glasses.
Ah.
And what I started to find was if I was driving with my specs, I could see distance, but if I was trying to pilot with a map, I'd try to look down at a map from looking at the road distance, and I found it very difficult to make that change. That sort of close-up vision got more blurry as I kind of went on. So I could happily go around and read things that I couldn't read before with no specs on. But I found I needed spectacles to read things close up. So I thought, well, okay, so what's happening then? So as we age, we tend to develop presbyopia. Which is that this problem of long sight gets improved or appears to, but your short sight it becomes poorer. So, you know, well, what would that be? Well, if you have a look at your eye, quite often they say, "Oh, your eye's like a camera." Well, there are sort of similarities to that. I mean, it's spherical or thereabouts, and that's one of the problems with eyesight is whether you see got close to a proper spherical eye or whether there's some distortion in your sort of makeup. But front point of your eye is the cornea, so basically that's the lens layer, that's the outer cover of the lens. And the kind of sight that your eye sits within. As your cornea ages, there's a tendency for it to harden or to get discoloured or distorted. Sitting behind that, the stuff that's in your eye centre is aqueous humour. So it's a kind of a gluey type of liquid, and sitting in that is the actual lens, which is what focuses what's coming in through your eye. So light appears from outside, like a camera lens, goes through the front of the camera, hits the lens, which focuses it on the receptive part of either film in the camera or in your eye is the retina. And the retina in your eye typically about the size, the area of a 10p piece. So you've got light coming.
Sorry, Paul, I was going to say, is that in old money or new money?
New, I think. Yeah, slightly more difficult these days, isn't it? Yeah. But then with the lens, there's a muscle called the ciliary muscle, which operates the iris of the lens, and that's the thing that will change your lens for distance and other things. And again, as we get older, that gets less positive function. So it's one of those things. It's a combination, the eye and seeing, between the optical setup, but the neural setup that carries the information from there back to the brain, and the focusing thing actually doesn't need the brain function, it does it automatically. Mm-hmm. So you've got then, you come back the sort of outer layers, the sclera, and you've got a choroid layer, but then the retina sits inside that and links through the back of the eye to the optic nerve, which carries the information that's there. So when we look at something, light comes in, hits the retina on the back, and it's kind of roughly in two sections. It's made up of what they call cones and rods. And they're the cells that translate the incoming information, the light, into electrical pulses back to your brain. And the cones, their function is to pick up colour. Typically, there are three types of cone: red sensitive, blue sensitive, and green sensitive. And if you look at that, typically in normal vision, we can see up to something like a million different colours. We can differentiate about a million different colours. Then the other bit is the rods, which aren't as colour sensitive. They're actually sensitive to the level of light, or what they call is grayscale. So how many shades of black to white can you get? And they tend to pick up the definite edges and things on what we see. And the problem with them is as darkness falls, they don't really function as well. So depending on how much you've got, then we'll look at what your night vision is. So again, one of the old jokes that came out of the Second World War about people who flew night fighters to try and bring down planes at night, they started this rumour that they were eating loads of carrots. And that's what made them be able to see at night. It wasn't the radar system that they were using as a guidance.
So a bit of espionage there.
So it's sort of a way to put people off the truth behind it. But what you see is that animals with night vision have got several million more rods than the human sort of amount. So that helps them to see it at night because they're picking up the information on a wider sort of platform, if you like. They've got more rods to do it. And there are apparently some people, when we go back to the cones, who can see, they've got a fourth type of cone, which sort of accelerates the amount of colour that you can differentiate. So, some people who can super see maybe have got this fourth cone, although some things you can learn, because they say this is a brain and optical function. So your brain does sort of a lot of things. Actually, at the back of your retina, there is a blind spot because of the way your eye's constructed, and your brain sort of sees around that,
fills it in.
So what you'll find a lot of the time with problems with your vision, the floaters that I started talking about, is your brain says, oh, forget them. and just see, which is great on a day-to-day, but then a change in lighting or something, all of a sudden you start thinking, oh, room's full of blooming flies within around.
Well, the rooms have been full of flies these last few days. But can I just go back to the cones and just ask you quickly? So if someone's colourblind, clearly the cones aren't working properly.
That's the problem, I say. It's a balanced system, but equally it can be the brain processing that's not working properly.
Because generally if people are colourblind, they can't distinguish between red and green and things like that, can they? So well, that's why.
Because that will be the type of cone that's working or not. So it could be physically that they've got some discrepancy, as indeed there's this fourth cone, which can give sort of a super colour vision, if you like, more on that. But it's finding that balance. As I say, we're talking about a camera. Well, you know, the brain processing behind a camera can be an electronic chip, but quite often from the outset of photography, it was a human brain.
Yes.
That was supplying that side of things. So you've got to see as a combined system to make it work. And say the brain is great at covering defects and helping out. And I think one of the other strange things I've got, I seem to have got a colour-related shift. I look at greenery now, and if I stare at it long enough, it starts to become strangely 3D.
Oh, I'm worried about you, Paul.
Oh,
yeah.
What's in your tea?
What's in your toothpaste? So?
I think
that's it. It's all, the thing is, well, somebody told me is as you get older, it's the muscles in your eyes. That's why, even though I had 20/20 vision, which meant I could read the bottom line and everything, that was so good until my 40s. And they said, naturally, you'll end up with reading glasses. I'm like, why? They said, because the muscles in your eyes lose elasticity.
Muscle, which is the focusing thing around your lens. I say, then cornea, obviously, the problem with that, and now what they can do is remove that and replace it. Because, again, one of the things that I've realised as I'm getting older is I find it more difficult to see in dark areas. So it can be quite sort of challenging to find anything small in dark areas as you get older. So there is an ageing problem, and it's kind of the apparatus getting past its sell-by date. a bit of wear and tear.
I'm just wondering what you're going to do next week.
Yeah,
what about ears?
Shelf life.
Ears, nose?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I can get around that. It's not to be sniffed at.
It's not. But just before you go, Paul, I've had a young person's cataract, so I've had the lens in my right eye replaced. And what I didn't realise is as your eye ages, your lens yellows. So in my right eye, I've got a brand new lens, and everything, if I close my left eye and just look through my right eye, everything is whites are really white. But if I close my right eye and look through my left eye, everything's really yellowy. And that happens as you get older. But when I look through both eyes together, my eyes balance it all out.
Yeah.
Clever.
Well, I think there's a kind of parallel to that, because I used to do electronics and I used to do television repairs. Quite often, if you sit watching your old colour TV decay over the years, you can save for it and you're quite happy with it.
You get used to it, don't you?
Yeah.
You suddenly see a new TV and you go, like, wow.
Yeah, I can see. Well, my cataract wasn't that bad, but in older people, some people who are having cataract surgery, their eyesight, the cataracts were so bad in their eyes, they couldn't even see any colour at all. So when they had them replaced, it's like, whoa, you know, I can see all this colour. But on just before you go, Paul, great chat there, but important thing is go and get your eyes checked. It's a massive, not you personally, but anybody who's listening, because it's a massive health check as well. They can tell a lot from that, your eyes, blood pressure, stuff like that.
I mean, they can actually study that sort of area at the back of your eye, and it can see things like diabetes. It can be a flag for that.
Yes.
So, by all means, I think it's worth looking after your eyes, because we only get issued with one set.
You do, and I think if you're over a certain age, you get a free eye check once a year anyway.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
So it's worth going to do it.
Yeah, because you know, these changes do occur. As I say, it's strange for me to have sort of switched from being short to being happy at distance, but actually not happy at close-ups. So,
well, I'm more worried about you seeing greener in 3D, Paul. And on that note, fantastic, Paul. We'll speak to you Monday. Glory Days Walk Show 1 till 3.
Good.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
I know you deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. If you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play, and never see you when deliberately you put me in my way, well here's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too, you're gonna lose that smile, because all the while, I can see for miles and miles, I can see for miles and miles. I could see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. You took advantage of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me, well that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while, I can see for miles and miles, I can see for miles and miles, I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Eiffel Tower and the Taj Mahal, nice to see on clear days. You thought that I would need a crystal ball to see right through the haze. Well, here's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too, you're gonna need that smile, because all the while, I can see for miles and miles, I can see for miles and miles.
Classic track from The Who there, I Can See For Miles, and we played that because we were talking to our PG about eyesight, and really important to keep your eyes regularly checked over. You've only got one pair of eyes. And you're, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms, we should have Chris Dale on the line.
Science.
Good morning, Chris.
Aye, aye.
Oh, are no. You all right? Oh, very yeah. Funny. But it's all important stuff, Chris, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I thought Paul did a really good job there.
He did as well. And before we start with what you're going to talk to about this week, last week Paul talked about teeth, which is also very interesting. And you sent me an article saying about some mouthwashes are now linked to cancer.
Yeah.
And it just makes you think, doesn't it? I mean, we're going to talk about food and diets, but it does make you think all these things you use in everyday life, your toothpaste, your mouthwash, your shampoos and things yeah. like that on day-to-day basis, and you look at the amount of chemicals that are in them.
And what's even worse is that those get washed into our rivers and our seas.
Yeah, I mean, Paul hinted at it about toothpaste at one point had little bits in it, didn't it?
Microplastics,
which they've banned now. Yeah. But, you know, there's still a massive way to go, isn't there?
There is. And people don't realise what the impact is until trends appear in science.
And it seems, if I'm right thinking, what I'm reading in the press and stuff like that is the science is coming through stronger and stronger on the impact of poor diet.
Yeah, well, I think we touched on that, didn't we, in the last live science show, where we highlighted that according to the World Health Organization, in 2030, the UK will become the fattest country in Europe. And by 2040, 4 in 10 of the population will be obese. And medical experts now believe that the impact of ultra-processed food is so bad, it now needs the most significant health intervention since tobacco was linked to cancer. And that's how bad it's getting now.
Yeah, which is quite shocking. But since you start coming on this show and talking about diet, we've periodically reviewed what we buy, and it's quite shocking. You know, you look at, I thought I was buying healthy wholemeal bread, you know, because it's better than white bread, isn't it? It's got nutrients in it. It's not just stuff taken out of it. You look on the labels, they're full of E numbers, preservatives. Worse still, salt. The wholemeal bread is generally more salty than white bread, and it's like...
Well, do you remember we spoke about ready meals and vegan ready meals, and actually vegan ready meals are far more unhealthy than ready meals containing meat and fish.
Yeah, but where do you draw the line? Because we've got to eat something, and you can't always make everything yourself.
I think a couple of months ago, I went to the supermarket and went round to try and find things that weren't ultra-processed or didn't have additives or preservatives or emulsifiers or weren't hyper-palatable food. And apart from the fresh veg and the fresh meat and wheat, was it shredded wheat, I think it was, we were struggling to find anything.
So it's one way to lose weight,
nice,
isn't
nice
it?
Diet, that. Shredded wheat and meat.
Being serious, cakes and things like that, even fresh stuff that's in chilled bits, you try and find one that's relatively healthy in terms of the amount of additives, impossible, nine impossible.
Yeah. Children's yogurts, you know,
it's just
children's cereals, it goes on. But what I wanted to do this week, and I promise at some point I'm going to come up with something that's fun and good news rather than always bringing bad news. but we wanted to talk about cancer rates amongst the under 50s have increased significantly since 1995. So that's sort of in the last 30 years, cancer rates in the under 50s have risen by nearly 25%.
Yeah, that's quite stark.
And what's incredible is that this increase is greater than in any age group. So you'd normally expect it to be in the older people because people are living longer. But in fact, the increase in cancer rate is greatest in the under 50s. And scientists believe this is linked to obesity levels, junk food and inactivity.
Mm.
So the number of people under 15 being diagnosed with cancer in the UK, as I say, has risen sort of 25% in the last 30 years. And this is a sharper increase than in any other group. And they, as they say, just to sort of clarify, this is as a result of the cheap, hyper-palatable junk food and inactivity. And we spoke about the hyper-palatable junk food in the past, which is that blend of salt, sugar and fat that humans just find irresistible and give them that sort of that satisfaction, that sort of feeling of satisfaction. But actually having that in any sort of large amounts is not good for us.
No. Mm.
So there's something in the order of around 35,000 under 50s are now developing cancer every year. And that's almost 100 young women and men a day that are being diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
And there's mounting concern that there's actually a global epidemic of cancer amongst young people emerging. And I think you mentioned last week about the American Society of Clinical Oncology, so the ASCO, that they had a focus on this at last month's cancer conference in America. And they were saying that they are at the early stages of understanding the reasons behind this rising cases. That the scientists, so this is the American Society of Clinical Oncologists, they believe poor diet, inactivity and obesity are behind the surging cancer rate, not just amongst people in the UK, but around the world.
Yeah, it's quite stark, isn't it?
It is. And we spoke about the impact of the Western diet in India, where in the last sort of 40 years, the Western diet and the fast food is now becoming a staple in India. Yeah. Whereas before, their diet was very much based on fresh vegetables and, you know, a lot of home cooking. People are now eating out. And as we said before, people are very concerned about the rise in cancer rates in India as well, which is entirely linked to junk food.
Yeah, yeah. Because if we talk about different foods, you know, particularly I think about cake, because I wouldn't normally bake my own cakes. But now I'm thinking I'd be better off baking my own cake because it would have butter, sugar, eggs, maybe, if you're not intolerant to eggs. But, you know, it's got very specific, limited ingredients. Nothing nasty in there.
No, and I definitely think all of us should consider cooking more at home. And I think we also touched on, didn't we, about some of the unpronounceable things that are in our food that we never have, that we never see in our store cupboard. So I think we agreed that anything that isn't in your store cupboard, isn't in your larder, isn't in your fridge, if it appears in junk food or ultra-processed food, you shouldn't be really eating it.
Yeah, because your body actually is not designed to digest those sort of chemicals anyway. But to be fair, Chris, a lot of the chemicals and preservatives are in there to give a longer shelf life. You take those out and the shelf life of a product just goes down, doesn't it?
It does, which is why we, I think it was in month five of doing this sort of work that we did on ultra-processed food, I think we concluded that you should be cooking your own food and freezing it rather than having ready meals.
Yeah, because you can control actually what goes in it.
What goes in and everything else, yeah. So, well, the other thing that I wanted to say was that the second biggest rise in cases is in people under the age of 25.
Yeah.
And that is, again, so that's the largest increase. So the largest increase is under 50, but the second largest increase is those under the age of 25.
Which
and
is,
that is
yeah.
frightening.
It is, and I'd read about this a few months back, and the scientists were saying they're not quite sure why at that point, because they're saying, is it because young people are more aware of symptoms and so they've been diagnosed earlier? But we think, well, clearly there is more to it than that.
Yeah, and a lot of younger people have been exposed to fast junk food a lot earlier in their lives.
Yes.
You know, we spoke about some of the children's meals that people cook. I mean, smiley faces and all that sort of stuff. They have a lot more preservatives and emulsifiers and the hyperpalatable part of it within the ingredients, and children are becoming addicted to that a lot quicker.
Yeah, and once you get used to eating that, you want to continue eating.
You want to continue eating, it becomes the norm. And that hyperpalatable food actually sort of makes your palate then find it very difficult to eat fresh vegetables and to eat sort of fresh fruits. And that's why sometimes children sort of taste fresh vegetables and sort of almost look like they're going to be sick, because their palate is just so used to that sort of fast food and junk food. The real issue.
Yeah, it is quite worrying. So what about the instance of cancer in older people? Because you said the scientists would expect older people to get more cancers because they've lived longer.
Yeah, well, people aged up to sort of over the age of 50, there has been an increase in cancer rates of around 14%, and in the ages of over 75, there was an increase of around 10%. So that's the sort of thing that you would expect, because people are living longer, that sort of thing. People probably at that age probably drank more alcohol than people before them as well. But if you compare that to the under 50s, it's the under 50s is almost double the increase of those over the age of 75.
Yeah.
Which, you know, absolutely amazing. And now, although cancers remain uncommon, about 90% of all cancers affect people over the age of 50. So I just want to sort of bring a little bit of stability to sort of say, well, actually, you know, you are much more likely to get cancer linked to age. The point that we're making is in the younger age groups, it's increasing.
I'd also read somewhere that they're linking it to plastics in your system, because you're picking the plastics in our water course, in our foods, tiny, tiny amounts of them. That may be another issue. It's why? Because a lot of the cancers are related to your digestive system.
Well, researchers are still in the early stages of trying to work out why cancer may be becoming a young person's disease. The scientists are sort of studying across lots and lots of areas. So they're looking at pollution, car pollution. You know, they're looking at the stuff that we eat, the sort of incidental stuff like drinking from plastic bottles.
Well,
sometimes cause small amounts of plastic to enter the system and be sort of digested and that sort of thing. They're looking at drugs. They're looking at, you know, there's a whole range of things that they're looking at. But what they have said is that they are absolutely certain that the risk of cancer is as a result of changes to lifestyle and diet over time.
Mm.
And in particular, that sort of, you know, that sort of golden thread that we have between ultra processed food, fat, sugar, salt, obesity, and inactivity, which is something that's becoming more common.
Yeah.
But the other thing that scientists have said is that actually probably genetics over time are starting to change as well, because the population is moving on. And doctors are seeing so many people now coming through clinics that have developed cancer, but it's very, very hard for the doctors to be able to say the reason why people are developing, because there isn't that scientific backup that there should be.
Yeah.
So it's quite a worrying trend, really. And going back to the American Society of Clinical Oncology, what they're also saying is that the impact of ultra-processed food causes, early aging, if you like, into the digestive system of humans.
Right, yes.
So the increase in bowel cancer and stuff like that is, again, a direct impact of all the things that we've been talking about.
Yeah, it is quite worrying, but it is early stages of research, isn't it, where they're trying to work at pinpoint, because often in these cases, there's lots of different factors, you know, which result in this
outcome. It was interesting, you know, when they started first researching into lung cancer as a result of smoking, there was, again, lots of sort of pushback from people saying, oh, it's, you know, it's rubbish and there are lots of other reasons. It's not just, you know, it's not just tobacco, and the tobacco industry sort of spent millions and millions of sort of trying to prove that their product was fine and perfectly acceptable to use. And people actually used to link smoking to a healthy lifestyle, didn't they? Which is quite unbelievable. But actually, the scientists always win in the end, because they prove
they've got
it.
The data. Yeah.
And you sort of think that now very similar things are happening in the food industry, that, you know, in the last sort of 10 years, the research has really picked up and people are really now starting to identify the impact of preservatives, emulsifiers, etc. in our food, which are just, you know, not a good thing.
No, and some supermarkets are trying to make that change, but it's a gradual change to phase out those things, isn't it, and use alternatives to the preservatives and stuff they're using. But, you know, the fast food companies, Chris, the marketing of the fast food companies, you know, in this time when some people, you know, are struggling with money and everything, you know, places like McDonald's are quite happy to say you can get three of these items for £3. So why would you go and buy a more healthy sandwich?
Yeah,
from somewhere else.
Don't quote me on this as fact, but I read somewhere that the advertising in the fast food and junk food industry is something like 15 times the level of money being spent on the research to find out the damage it does.
Yeah, I read there was a big article about the lady in charge of Greggs, which you'll be pleased to know, Chris, we don't go anymore.
Well, congratulations.
Well, I had the app. I blame somebody else for that, but anyway. But
not me.
Interestingly, the woman was saying, you know, nobody's saying our food's super healthy, but we're not saying you should eat it every day. But the fact of the matter is people are eating it every day.
Yeah, and, you know, even if you go to the Meadowhall Shopping Centre, if you walk down, you know, the sort of the streets within the Meadowhall Shopping Centre, nearly every sort of market stall is selling donuts or cakes or cookie dough or something that's sweet.
Yes.
And they have lots of sort of, you know, buy six for £3, you know, whereas it's four for £2.50, sort of really trying to push the sale of that stuff. And I found it quite depressing, you know.
It is. And, you know, you go back to when you first started coming on the show, Chris, talking about diet, we touched on places like Japan, who saw this coming after the Second World War and said, we're not having it. We're not having kids in at school. They will eat. They'll only have fresh fruit and vegetables and fish and stuff like that. And it's all geared up for that. It's got to come, hasn't it, Chris? Here in the UK. I mean,
well, it might not be our lifetime, but it might be one of those situations where the cancer rates start to increase so much that the government is forced to act.
Yeah, but you know, it's a full cycle, isn't it? You think about years ago, plastics.
Yeah.
And fast food, you know, they were the up-and-coming things decades ago, weren't they? Look at where we're at now. And you almost think, look at all the packaging we waste on products. Ready meals, the cardboard, the plastics, all the stuff you can't recycle, some of it you can. But if people go back to cooking their own food, all that packaging goes, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the carbon footprint of ready meals, again, we touched on that a few months ago. The carbon footprint of ready meals is quite significant because they need to be made, they need to be packaged, they need to be preserved, they need to be transported, they need to be kept refrigerated, and they need to have a shelf life of sort of a week to 2 weeks to make them viable. Those various things sort of have an impact. But I wanted to conclude this conversation, actually, by a fact is that around 4 in 10 cancers are preventable.
Yeah.
And there are steps that people can take to reduce that risk. And I know this is going to be blindingly obvious, Julie and Paul, but not smoking, keeping a healthy weight, being safe in the sun,
yes,
cutting down on alcohol, all of those make a big difference. But the biggest difference that you can make, 100%, avoid ready meals, ultra-processed food that contain additives, preservatives, emulsifiers, and chemicals that nobody can pronounce.
Yeah.
So if we can avoid those, that will make the biggest difference. So just to repeat that, not smoking, keeping a healthy weight, being safe in the sun and cutting down on alcohol all make a difference. But the biggest difference is having a healthy diet, so avoiding ready meals, ultra-processed food that contain additives, preservatives, emulsifiers and chemicals that nobody can pronounce.
And that's sound advice. But the thing is, it's not that easy, avoiding ready meals and ultra-processed food. It's everywhere, Chris. It's in crisps. It's in crisps. It's in sauces. You try and find something.
Soups, yeah.
Everything.
Cereal. Now, hopefully next month we're trying to get a special guest called Daniel Hennessy.
Yes.
And he's somebody that has made that significant change in diet. And hopefully if his parenting allows it, he would like to come on the show.
Fantastic.
And talk about the differences that he's had by changing his diet and getting rid of ultra-processed food. And he's a really intelligent man who can talk firsthand about his experience that probably will bring a lot of what we've been discussing together.
In a like a real life case. Am I right in thinking he's sort of struggled with his weight, maybe, as all his life, or was he?
Well, I'll leave you to chat to Dan with that, because actually, the interesting part is not just about weight loss; it's about the change in diet. Full stop. That's what's going to be the most interesting thing.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. We could carry on forever, Chris, couldn't we?
Well, as I said, next time I come on, I'm going to try and find something that's a bit more light-hearted.
A bit happy. What are you going to go for then?
I don't know. I'll have to think about it.
All good stuff, Chris. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Take care, Julian.
Bye-bye.
Can I take your order, please?
The fast food song by the Fast Food Rockers, and we played that because we're talking to Chris Dale about the rise in cancer rates, and the researchers are saying it's all down to poor diet as well as obesity and inactivity. The film show are here, so bye bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.